another episode of the Heel Turn Podcast. I'm Paul, along with my colleague, Lyman Zerga. Lyman.
And today we have a special guest all the way from Saratoga, Florida, Bucky Buchanan.
Otherwise known as the Jim Cornette lover, Brian Knowles.
Hey, how's it going? Pleasure to be here.
You want to talk about Jim Cornette a little bit? Because I know you love him.
Right back, guys.
Well, you know, when you say it like that, it sounds a little weird, you know? I think you should clarify that I am an admirer of his work and his views on professional wrestling.
You're a mark. You're a Jim Cornette mark.
Oh, absolutely.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. We're going to get more into that. We'll probably get in-depth a little bit. What me and Lyman want to know, though, is how did you become a wrestling fan? What attracted you to the business? And that sort of thing.
Well, first thing I should point out is I was not really a wrestling fan growing up as a kid. And I grew up in the height of the Attitude Era. Like, I watched a little bit of WCW. Like, I'll put it this way. Here's how much I did not know about wrestling. When I would watch it, when I'd be at my grandmother's house, my mom was working, and I'd be flipping through the channels.
Wait, you mean to tell me Grandma Knowles let you watch wrestling?
She didn't really care what I watched.
Oh, okay.
I would be flipping through the channels, and I didn't realize that WWF and WCW were two different companies. I thought it was just all the same thing. I thought it was just two different shows on at the same time. Basically, I was you know, smart before I even knew what was going on, because I thought it was all, you know, just part of the, that the war was a whole work. But I knew who Sting was, but I didn't know who Hulk Hogan was. That's how little I knew about wrestling.
How can you not know who Hulk Hogan was?
I ask myself that every day.
Wow.
But I was a huge... I liked Sting mainly because I was like 7 years old, and of course I love the face paint. Shows you how, you know, easy it is to market to children.
Okay. Lyman, do you have any questions for our guest?
Think of work. 9/11 or the Montreal Screwjob?
I don't know if I answered your question of how I became a fan, though, but I'll answer that first. You know, depending on what kind of answer you want, it could go either way. Because 9/11, obviously, is a huge tragedy. I still remember I was 10 years old when it happened. And, you know, really got the country rallied up, you know, for like 3 weeks until it was old news. But the Montreal Screwjob, as far as the scope of the community it impacted, really, to this day, could be considered a greater war, because we still don't exactly know what happened. Even though some people claim we don't know what would happen on 9/11, the book's been open and, you know, been closed on that. But the Montreal Screwjob, we still don't know the whole story, and it's a huge conspiracy theory to this day, especially if you've seen that movie, The Montreal Theory, which was very good. I highly recommend it.
Did they interview Earl Hebner for that one? Because I haven't seen it.
I believe they have, because a lot of the movie is like clips of interviews. Like, they had Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash and Sean Waltman, Jerry Lawler, all kinds of people. I think they did have a clip of Hebner in there, but he was not prominently featured, no.
See, that's the one person in the whole Montreal Screwjob, and maybe you can help me out on this one too, is Earl Hebner. We've gotten Vince's side, we've gotten Shawn Michaels' side, we've gotten Bret Hart's side. I have not seen Earl Hebner's side, or heard of it.
I just went Owen Hart's side.
What a despicable human being.
Well, I mean,
are.
You kind of know. I mean, if you listen to stories of other people, you know what Owen Hart's side was. He, because the British Bulldog bought out his own contract to leave because of it, and Owen, who, you know, it's widely known, he wanted to retire early, and he was, he basically was talked into staying, you know, and it really. It kind of hurt his career, because even though Vince, you know, gave him a pay bump, he kind of buried him, and, you know, we all know he went back to the Blue Blazer, and
we
the rest
all know.
Is history.
We all know how that worked out. All right, now let's go back to your fandom. How did you become a fan?
Well, it was, let's see, it was right around WrestleMania 26, so we're talking 2010, I believe.
Okay.
A mutual friend of ours.
Who we hope to have as a guest later on.
You gotta have him on the show.
Patrick.
You gotta.
Yeah.
Oh, Patrick, I've seen Brian. I was going to try and get him drunk for the show. Brian.
Oh, you got it. Wait, talking about me?
No,
Brian.
Oh, yeah,
Brian,
you have
yeah.
to. But he called me up. We hadn't talked in a while. And he, you know, guess he wanted to check in with me, and he was like, hey, you watching WrestleMania? I'm like, what, wrestling? He's like, yeah, you know, I always have a big party at my house every year, so why don't you come over and watch it? I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, so I'm watching NCIS, like, one night, a couple weeks before WrestleMania, and they say Raw's coming on, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, I better know what's going on. I probably don't know anybody who's on here. And the promo said, watch Stone Cold Steve Austin guest host as Bret Hart comes back to sign his contract. I'm like, wait. First of all, I know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is. Second of all, even I know what the Montreal Screwjob is. And Bret Hart's going to be on Raw. You're kidding me, right? Sorry, at least it wasn't on, so I don't have to buy you guys a beer.
We had a little technical issue there.
Remember, if a phone goes off during an interview, you owe everybody who's listening a beer. But mine was on vibrate.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yes.
Okay,
this
so
phone's always on vibrate. What?
Ew.
Okay, so you're watching Raw. You get to watch Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret Hart in the ring. Bret signing a contract for his match with Vince.
Yes.
Okay, and now you're hooked.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I'm going to get so much heat for this, but you know what? Because I was watching, and I'm like, okay, you know, because this is like unusual for me, because you know, I've you know, sort of into adult life now. I had already started college. And
that's not really adult life.
No,
that's
no, but you know, I'm not a
that's just extending a childhood with
point
alcohol.
Point taken. But you know, you're a little more in adult life. You're not a child anymore. So, and this, especially back then, it appeals to children.
It's what?
And cocaine.
Wow. Okay.
So, but the point is, I'm sitting here and I'm watching this atmosphere, this world, and I'm sitting here going, and I'm just taken aback by it, because this is nothing like you ever see anywhere else.
Right.
And for somebody who's pretty much a wrestling virgin at this point, I've never really sat down and watched it before. I'm just like, wow, you know, this, in a twisted way, this is very entertaining, even
now,
though
when
I know
you
this
say,
is for children.
Now, when you say, I haven't sat down to watch it before, you mean actually sit down and pay attention.
Pay attention and know what's going on.
Right.
You know? And this is what's going to get, that's what I was getting at, that's going to get me heat. I remember watching, and all of a sudden, this guy comes out, dripped in gold. He's got three belts on him. He's got two tag team belts in the United States Championship. He's got a faux hawk and a trench coat on, and he just looks with these serious eyes and got a giant backing him up. And I'm like, ooh, who's this guy? And he gets on the microphone, and he just starts cutting this promo. And I'm like, and he was the guy who got my attention, and his name was The Miz. I have no idea why. It's just, he was the first guy that really got my attention.
I want to know something, and we're going to deviate a little bit as we go along here. I want to know how Lyman became a fan, because I don't think we've ever established that. How did you become a fan?
Watching I was a child was bored on Monday nights.
Well, that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
I've been a fan since the Gorilla Monsoon, Bobby Heenan, Primetime Wrestling days.
Very good
so
stuff.
I've been watching since at least late 80s, early 90s, when you had your, you know, Hogan's and Warriors and Savages. The storylines were believable, but not yet cartoonish, you know, at mm-hmm. that point. And it was good wrestling. It was more wrestling than promos than what we have, mm-hmm. you know. It was completely different than what we have today. Not saying that the product is bad today.
Oh, no, especially not today. It's, I think over the last, I would say, year and a half, 2 years, it's improved by leaps and bounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more, it's, now, the television, we'll probably get into that later. The television product, it is what it is. But the pay-per-views, especially over the, since WrestleMania of this year, have been very consistent.
Now, who have been some of your favorite wrestlers to watch as far as in-ring stuff or promo stuff since you've been watching over the last 5 years?
Well,
and this could be over any organization, whether it be WWE
sure.
or TNA or Ring of Honor.
Well, to kind of continue the story briefly, after, you know, I was briefly, you know, I liked The Miz, but I quickly learned, you know, once I saw him in the ring, that, you know, wasn't exactly my cup of tea. But I remember, but the guy who became my favorite and really got me to really stick around and get into wrestling was Edge.
Okay.
And I had briefly remembered the whole Matt Hardy Lita feud. I was familiar with that.
No, we don't.
No, Lyman.
Unfortunately,
and
Van Dam is not here today. Sorry.
And I just remember seeing him. first time I really saw him was in a triple threat on Raw with Sheamus, Batista, and Randy Orton. And Edge comes in at the end and makes the end. Spears Randy Orton for Batista to get the win. And I just remember Matt Stryker on commentary going, "Spear! That's Edge!" And the shot of him when he stood up from the spear and his hair was in his face and he just looked like such a badass. I'm like, wait, that's Edge?
Yeah.
And the way that he walked to the back, I'm like, holy shit, that guy is cool.
And you know, WrestleMania 26 being the first WrestleMania, being the first WrestleMania that you watched, by the way, I feel a little distracted because we have Lyman, who is not only my partner and colleague for this podcast, he's also our coordinating producer, and he's over here trying to make lunch plans as we record this. But going back to WrestleMania 26.
I also want some weed, too.
Well, I mean, you know.
I'll give a call to RVD next time I know he's in town.
No, call Sean.
I will call Sean, yeah.
WrestleMania, going back to WrestleMania 26 being the first WrestleMania that you actually sat down and watched with a group of people, not a bad WrestleMania to watch, but not the best.
I remember,
it was entertaining, though.
I remember because it was my first WrestleMania, you know, I had nothing else to compare it to. So now, look, you know, seeing subsequent WrestleManias, yes, it's probably, actually, I wouldn't say it's the weakest because 29 was kind of weak. But at the time, I was just sitting there watching pretty much the Super Bowl of wrestling, which
Correct.
Is what the only thing I had to compare it to, really. And I just remember really being blown away by the, of course, Undertaker Shawn Michaels match.
And that was actually not the best of the two, in my opinion.
Remember when you paid $400 for a Florida concert?
Go fuck yourself. Because that was a great WrestleMania.
Would you rather we say a Machine Gun Kelly concert?
I don't have an opinion on the matter because I got to see Shawn Michaels, referee, Triple H, and Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match, and I got to see my boy Edge go into the Hall of Fame, so fuck yourself.
Hey, you know what, though? But
you
have
to see Florida. Hey, I'm sure you have a good feeling about that.
But let me say this, though. Didn't you have a palm tree blocking your view?
Yes, but luckily, thanks to the boys at Pro Wrestling Report, who I was in their suite, we had the pay-per-view feed inside the suite, so I got to see all the camera angles. And hear Jim Ross on commentary for the Cell match. So, you know, the palm tree in the end really didn't bother me that much.
Were you with us for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view when we went in New Orleans? He was here in New Orleans. Were you with us that
yes.
night?
That was
yes.
the day me and BK met.
That was when who?
You and me met.
2013?
No, that was Hell in
a
Cell.
Hell
in
a Cell?
In 2011.
Yeah, all right. My bad.
Okay.
You get confused. We got to remember, Elimination Chamber is Randy's favorite event.
Oh, yeah. Sadly, I'm
no
longer.
We were there, and Mark Henry was blocking our view when that chamber came down. And we referenced WrestleMania 28.
Yes, we did. But I tell you what, at least that was funny because everybody in our section was laughing hysterically at the jokes we were making the whole time Mark Henry was in that pod. Blocking
and
our view.
Our luck, he was the last one to go in.
Oh, you knew that was going to happen.
That's beside the point. Talk about, I guess, some of the better managers that you've seen. You basically witnessed Paul Heyman.
My favorite manager is definitely Eva Marie.
Did you see her waterworks on NXT the other night?
She's crying. I
gotta say, I feel bad for her. I really do.
Not really.
Or is that because of the crowd reactions and
everything? Oh, the crowd just shit on her.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's getting off topic, but since he brought it up, I feel bad for her.
This is fine, because this is more of a conversation than anything.
True.
And that's what podcasts should be.
Yeah. I've just, you know, like, ever since, like, you know, obviously, people dog her, but WWE kind of put her in a bad position, because they basically brought her in to be on Total Divas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so whenever, and then they throw her in the ring, and it's like, what do you think's going to happen? When people have heard her talk on television enough to know that she really doesn't know the business, the way that it's presented, at least, it looks like she really doesn't have any respect for the business and what the people who pay their dues do, because she just basically got brought in on a free ride, according to Total Divas.
Right.
So why should anybody have respect for her?
Right.
But I will say that seeing her train with Brian Kendrick at least made me stop and think, you know, maybe she's trying to put in some effort, because I know Brian Kendrick is a very good trainer,
mm-hmm.
and he does, you know, do a good amount of work training girls, and I've, you know, known well enough that, you know, if he takes on a student, He didn't take any bullshit.
And he was former one half of a tag team championship combination with Paul London when you had the brand split.
I gotta tell you, his best work was in TNA.
And he's a world champion for about 15 seconds.
Hey, you know.
Where?
His championship scramble match they did a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In
but,
scramble matches, I think he was the... until the, whatever, I forget who won that match, but he was the guy who was... came in second, for lack of a better term,
I guess. Okay, so let's go back to what we were... when I asked you, managers.
Yeah.
Your opinion. Because you've actually watched Paul Heyman since you've watched the business since 2010, as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about maybe some managers that, in your opinion, because I know you like talking about managers when we have discussions. And
I love talking about managers.
Give me your thoughts.
First of all, I'm going to say, no, I'm not just going to pull new people out because I actually have done my research and gone back and read my wrestling history. I got to say, my favorite managers are, of course, yes, Paul Heyman. Definitely in one of the tops. I'll turn this into a Mount Rushmore question. Paul Heyman, especially with his work in the last few years, but also what he did in WCW with, you know, as Paulie Dangerously. I also have to go with Gary Hart, just because he was such a tough guy, and having read part of his book, because I haven't been able to find an actual physical copy of it yet, to read the whole thing.
Wait, Gary Hart wrote a book?
Yes, he did. It's actually one of the most sought-after pro wrestling books in the business right now because it's not in print anymore, although Court Bauer is trying to get it, you know, reprinted.
Okay,
so... JP may have that. He might be able to borrow that from him.
If he does, I'd love to because I still haven't been able to read the whole thing.
Okay, so you've given me Heyman and Gary Hart.
I gotta go with Classy Freddie Blassie, of course.
Okay, Fred Blassie.
You know, just because... And...
Size aside, your pencil neck geek.
My favorite WrestleMania intro was the one they did with Blassie.
Mine too.
Was that 14?
I thought that was 16 or 17, I thought.
They did a little something with 14.
Okay.
If you want to go back and watch that. Okay, so you've got Gary Hart, Paul Heyman, and Freddie Blassie.
And this one's tough because, you know, I love Jim Cornette so much. But, you know, but that's mainly, you know, I mainly became a fan of his because of his shoot interviews. But I got to give the edge out to the manager of the Four Horsemen, J.J. Dillon.
Wow. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think you've got a pretty good Rushmore there, but no Bobby Heenan in that Rushmore? Bobby Heenan has probably managed more wrestlers than anybody. And not saying that your Rushmore is bad, but it's a good one, but Bobby Heenan missing.
I knew you were going to say that, and here's my only answer to that. I just didn't want to go with the guy that everybody... Because, I mean, Bobby Heenan is at a level of onto himself.
Right.
I wanted to make this interesting and actually give you somebody else.
Do you think Paul Heyman, even though he has his own different style, is the modern-day Bobby Heenan? Or is he just completely different from Bobby Heenan that the two can't be compared?
I just... You know, I'm going to sound like, you know, like a corporate guy, you know, guy here, but every guy is different. You know, they have their own style. They have their own approach. Like Paul Heyman will tell you in every interview that he does nowadays, he's not a manager. He's an advocate. And that's his style.
Right.
Like, yes, you know, like as far as like, you know, having to label his role in a universal system that we all know, yes, he would be a manager. But he doesn't see it that way. He sees himself as an advocate,
Heyman
like a lawyer almost.
Heyman did a great job explaining what he does on the Stone Cold podcast.
Yes, he did.
Last week.
Oh, yeah, great podcast.
Did. But
kind of rubbed Stone Cold the wrong way at the end of the podcast, though. But that might be a little setup for what we could see later on.
Like, here, like off the top of my head.
But that's what Heyman does, though. And he does it well.
He didn't rub him
like, here's
that
the top of my head.
Hard.
Like, Bobby Heenan had a lot of funny things that he did. Like, you know, he would be involved in, like, funny storylines where he would be, like, you know, the
weasel.
Thank you. The perfect word. The weasel who always gets his at the end and gets made to look like a fool, you know, like, especially on his exit outside, the, you know, out of the WWF.
Right.
Gorilla Monsoon dragged him out of was it the Hammerstein Ballroom?
No, that was
the
Manhattan Center.
And, you know, threw him out in the parking lot with his toilet paper, with his underwear,
that
whatever
he had.
That was classic. It was.
That was classic.
But that was what, you know, that was always the, you know, the end of the road for Bobby Heenan, and then he'd move on to another story. Paul Heyman, it's a little different because he never really gets made to look like a fool. He always is so devious that, you know, he always, you know, saves face a little bit at the end.
Right.
Except for Curtis Axel.
Well, they
that's
tried
been
that.
Retconned. We don't talk about that anymore.
They tried that, and then they tried it with Cesaro, and
him too.
There was a difference between that, though. Cesaro, it would have worked if they wouldn't have taken the rug out from under him. Curtis Axel wasn't going to work no matter what.
The problem with Cesaro is that he was getting over with the swing.
Yeah.
And they took the swing away from him.
They took all, like I said, they took the rug out from under him, and that's, we got what we got.
Okay, now, we're, what, 15 months into this WWE Network? It's already supposedly won awards. I can give you my opinion on the network.
What is it?
Right now, I think it's genius. Because they give old school wrestling fans like myself an opportunity to go back and watch those old WrestleManias and those old SummerSlams and some of that old school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also give younger fans, the 16, 17, 18-year-olds, an opportunity to do the same thing.
They give us Slam City. That's all I care about.
They give us Slam City. And they've also put the old episodes of the cartoon, you know, the Rock and Wrestling thing.
And the great thing about it is, if you don't want to watch it, you don't have to.
You don't have to.
You can watch
demand.
All demand. Exactly.
So, your thoughts on the WWE Network, and have you utilized, do you feel like you've utilized it like it was intended, or have you not utilized it enough?
Let me put this in perspective for you. Up until, after I got into wrestling, you know, I was really, especially getting to know you, I became fascinated with wrestling history. I'd go back and watch as much old stuff as
right.
I could. I basically did the mid 2000s equivalent of tape trading, which was there were these people who would run online streams on like Justin TV or whatever, and they would play their old videotapes of like Raw. They would have Raw
right.
marathons, old ECW, old primetime wrestling, whatever. So it was early like bootleg WWE Network before there was one.
Right.
Once we got the WWE Network, and once they started putting all those old episodes of those old shows up, it was like, oh, I can watch this whenever I want. I don't have to wait for some dude in his basement to broadcast it live now.
Right.
But here's the genius thing about the WWE Network, and this is going back a little bit in history. You remember, of course, 2001 when WWE bought WCW.
Yes.
There's a podcast host who's actually one of the top podcasts in the world, the Solid Monster, Jason Solid Monster. I sent him an email once when I was listening to some old Wrestling Observer newsletter radio episodes from that time. And they were talking about, Dave Meltzer said it that in an interview around that time, Linda McMahon was addressing the sale and said that the tape library was going to be the most valuable thing they get because they were talking about launching a 24-hour, you know, pay channel. Where they would, but it was, of course, on cable. It wasn't on demand like it is now.
Right.
But they were realized they were planning a WWE Network or some incarnation of it as early as 2001.
Well, then that ended up becoming WWE 24/7.
Yes.
It ended up becoming the on-demand stuff that you could go to WWE.com. And now we have the network. So it was an evolving thing.
It just shows you how far ahead of the times they were and how they were able to see the future.
Right.
And it is paying dividends for them now. Like, what did they pay? They paid fractions of pennies on the dollar for that library?
I think it was mentioned that Vince, and I might be off on the figure, but I think Vince paid maybe, what, $500,000 for the whole company.
I've heard $500,000. I've heard $4 million. All I know is Jericho has said countless times, if I'd have known it was for sale, I could have bought it.
I mean, Vince bought it at a bargain, and Linda was right. Not only do you have the WCW stuff, you have the NWA stuff.
Yeah, that's
there's
why they bought all those libraries. They saw it coming.
There.
And that's why Paul Heyman said last week on Stone Cold, they saw where the business was going. They saw the advent of cable, and they bought everybody out because they knew they were going to need all that content.
Is there anything on the is there anything not on the network now that you would like to see?
Is there anything not on the network?
I'd like to see them put more Nitros on there.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them put maybe some of the Thunders on there.
Maybe the early ones. After
Lightning.
After like 3 months,
who?
It became
Lightning.
Repetitive.
The running back from the University of Wisconsin that won the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, he was Thunder in Tiki Barber's Lightning.
Oh, We're not talking about that. We're not talking about that New York Giants running back right. combo.
But I will ask you something.
I do have a question coming in about WCW that Matt Mayer just asked.
All right, okay. Just let me ask you one question first. Have they started putting Mid-South on there? Because I haven't seen it yet.
There might be some old Mid-South stuff on there if you go into the vault, but I think it's very, very minimal.
See, being from, you know, from the New Orleans area and having, and, you know, I know so many people who've who worked in Mid-South back in the day, and they tell me stories all the time, and I find what footage I can get on the internet, but I would really like them to release some Mid-South.
Okay, I have a question to ask you in that respect later on, but okay. Let's go to this one. From a listener.
A fan question. Viewer,
can you discuss why former WCW tag team champion Judy Bagwell is not in the Hall of Fame yet?
Who the hell is Judy Bagwell?
Buff Bagwell's mother, who had a prominent role on WCW programming before its ultimate demise.
I got nothing.
My point exactly. That's how much it didn't matter. That's how much WCW resorted to. Okay, let me ask you this. All right, Judy Bagwell becoming a tag team champion? Is that what the question was?
Wait, are you
was?
Serious? No, you're messing with me, right? There's no way.
Can you discuss why former WCW tag team champion Judy Bagwell isn't in the Hall of Fame yet? All right, is that the same equivalent as David Arquette winning the WCW world title? They just needed something stupid to put on TV?
I think at that point that whoever was the booker, was it Nat? Wait, what year was
it?
2000, 2001?
That had to be Vince Russo.
Well, no, it depends. Was it 2000 or 2001? Because remember, they went between Russo, Nash, and then Russo again, briefly.
Buff Bagwell beat Canyon in a match where she was suspended from a forklift.
Oh, that's such a waste for
Wait, they
a
used to
talented
have those
guy
matches
like,
in the old NWA
like Chris
days.
Canyon.
Wait, they used to have those old matches, those types of matches in the old NWA days where they would prevent the manager from interfering.
Yes, they put
so
him in a cage
would put
or something.
Cornette
yeah.
in the cage.
Yeah.
Or they put J.J. Dillon in the cage and they'd suspend him over the ring. So that doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised WWE hasn't done that
it's
more.
It's just. I mean, I don't know because I don't know
no
the
sense.
Time that it happened, but it does sound like something Russo would do.
Okay, so talk about maybe some of the best matches that you've seen, in your opinion.
Sure.
Some of the better matches that you've seen watching. And again, we can go on all organizations and territories.
Sure. A common theme, just before I get to that, a common theme that really makes a difference in whether or not I think a match goes from being really good to just great or epic is the big fight feel, the atmosphere, not only in the execution, but in the build.
Mm-hmm.
Just where it feels like, I know people were just running around about the Cormier fight all over town. It was the talk of the town.
And
you know?
Cormier didn't fight last night, by the way.
No, because he won it two weeks ago.
Right. So they took him off the card.
But when he was in that title fight, you know, it was the talk of the town. Everybody's like, oh, you got to watch Cormier. Everybody was so excited about it. That's really the difference between a good match and an epic match. And the earliest one I can remember, as far as I've been watching, the first time I really felt that was Money in the Bank 2011 with Cena and Punk.
Of course. It's a good one.
Because it was just everybody was talking about it. The internet. Like, when was the last time before that everybody was talking about wrestling?
Right.
You know,
in Chicago, in a wrestling hotbed.
I mean, just go back and watch his entrance for that match alone. It felt like the biggest, like an old boxing match from the 1940s. I mean, it was just insane.
What you got?
Rick Steiner, Judy Bagwell's partner.
Wow.
Rick Steiner?
Mm-hmm.
No kidding.
We're getting a date right now.
I gotta go back and find that. Just
our coordinating producer is doing our research as well. He's our research guy as well, it seems.
Yeah, smart brother, you as well.
He wears many hats
and no pants.
No pants.
Thank
I
you.
Can tell you that for a fact.
Wow. Okay, you mentioned before
I'm watching a lot of YouTube nowadays.
You mentioned before that you talked to a lot of guys that used to wrestle in Mid-South. You talked to
71 days
podcast people. You talked to. I know you've told me that
and
you've
never
had
lost it, no.
Conversations with one Justin Labar.
Yes.
Now, is
I
this
have two.
Now, I understand
screw
that.
You.
I
screw
know
you.
That.
I met him.
And
no,
no this is not saying, and I'm not bragging, saying, "Oh, look who I met or who I know." No,
no.
That's
I guess
I'm getting
my,
at.
My I guess my question to you though
yeah, you
is when you talk to people there. That were affiliated with Mid-South Championship Wrestling, are you just saying, or are you being honest with that, or is it bullshit?
No, it's not bullshit.
Okay.
You'll be surprised. It's a weird thing. It's you know in New Orleans, you'll never. You never know who you're gonna meet in a bar.
Okay, no, you're
you never
right.
know.
You're
you
right
never know.
You're
you
right
could run that. Into a former Saints player or an actor or whoever, just because you never know. And one of the guys who I really got learned a lot from.
All right, so anyway,
no, but like I'll give you one example. I don't think you'll mind talking to me about him. A guy named this guy that I met as a karaoke DJ at a bar several years ago. His name in the business is Reinhard von Scherbach. He's a manager. He wears a Nazi. He's 6'6", I think. He's got blonde hair. He walks around in a Nazi uniform and is basically an SS officer for the most dastardly heels you'll ever see. And this guy, and I've gotten to know him pretty well, and we talk about wrestling all the time when I see him, and he's told me stories of when he was, you know, just working ring crew. You know, in the 70s, and he was like, yeah, one night after a show, it was Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, and I think DDP might have been there as well when he was, you know, managing. And he's like, yeah, kid, you're driving us out, down to downtown. And he's like, okay. And then he goes down there, and, you know, he's trying to, you know, just, he's not drinking, he's just trying to make sure everything's going good. And then all of a sudden, Ric Flair gets in the middle of a fight in a bar with NOPD, and he's just trying to get him out of there, and he's like, oh, come on, we gotta go. He's like, I do know who I am. I'm the Nature Boy. Woo! These guys lived their gimmicks in real life, especially down here, because there was just no holds barred.
I
back
think
then.
Back then, though, you kind of had to.
Oh, you had to, absolutely.
You've listened to more Jim Cornette shoot interviews than I have. We know your love affair with Jim Cornette. Do you get a hard on for Jim Cornette? I'm like, do you dream at night about Jim Cornette?
Let
and
me tell you
wake
something.
Up at night with like the biggest.
If I was attracted
on,
to other men, do you not think I could find a better looking man than Jim Cornette?
Well,
to be,
I mean, you probably
obsessed
could,
with.
But you talk about him like you have relations with him.
No, it's. The thing about Jim Cornette is for somebody who has no clue who he is, the thing that can really hook them if they're doing their research on wrestling is just hearing his stories and how he tells them and how friggin' entertaining they are. Like, I'll give you an example. One time I was just laughing my ass off of this. Have you heard the story of when he was running OVW and he's constant clashing with John Laurinaitis?
I've heard that he's had some conflict.
Okay, well, there was one part where he's talking about
Johnny Ace.
Yeah, there was one part where he's talking about Doug Basham. He was the top heel in OVW.
Okay.
And then, he's Danny Davis's nephew. And he comes in for television one night, and he's bald-headed because he had the long blonde hair, I think. And Cornette's just looking at him like, what, with those eyes of his, what the fuck did you do? And he goes, well, they had me come to Raw and blah, blah, blah. He's like, and he just loses his shit. And he goes in his office, calls John Laurinaitis. He goes, John Laurinaitis, my top heel just walked into television, looked like a 40-year-old bald-headed truck driver. Tell this creative team, if they can't imagine what a guy looks like bald, I'll schedule a hair match. We could sell some tickets. Thank you. Fuck you. Bye. And it's just, I mean, the way that he gets animated
right.
when he's, especially when he's mad at people. And it's like a professional thing, because I grew up in the theater and I grew up around people like this who are just so hands-on, and when people are fucking with their business, they just, they lose it.
Right. Any other things about Jim, does Jim Cornette, listening to everything that you...
Now, if you want to know something, a dissenting opinion about Cornette, I can't stand his politics. I can't listen to his show.
Really?
I cannot.
Why?
He's in love with Obama.
Oh, you're talking about, okay.
He thinks Obamacare is the greatest thing ever without, you know, actually looking at the facts of how much it's costing us.
Well, let's not make this a political
show. No,
absolutely
not, but you...
is there anybody in the business that Jim Cornette, like, absolutely despises past or present? And I know there is.
Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, anyone in ROH?
No, not Sami Zayn.
He ran ROH.
I mean, Jesus Christ, he did an entire shoot interview Young segment Bucks. Where with Sean Oliver, where he had an entire chalkboard filled with the top 10, and they went through about 30 names of people, but he had to reduce it to the top 5. It took like 45 minutes to do that.
Does he like Ric Flair?
Honestly, I can't recall him really having anything. I mean, like, that's asking, like, if Ric Flair is in the top 100 of people he hates, because he's not even... If he does have any ill feelings, I haven't heard anything, and he's definitely not within the top 20.
As far
as I know.
You've listened to a lot of shoot interviews, not just Cornette.
No.
Talk about some of the other shoot interviews that you've heard, and which one really stands out to you.
Let's see.
I like listening to shoot interviews because it gives you a new perspective on the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Just hearing the stories are great.
Right. That's why I kind of wish, and this is, we're squirreling a little bit, but this is where I kind of wish that Legends of Wrestling would come back for the WWE Network.
I love that thing.
But talk about some of the shoot interviews that you listen to and which ones really stand out to you.
Well, obviously, Cornettes are, they're in their own stratosphere for me.
Does he put a new one up every so often?
Well, I mean, he does, you know, on his podcast, The Jim Cornette Experience, I'll give him a plug. He does talk about, you know, the current state of the business, and sometimes he'll tell a story or two, but I know he is currently doing with Kayfabe Commentaries the Back to the Territory series, which is great. I highly recommend it. I bought the Mid-South DVD with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He does some interviews, you know, like every so often with Sean Oliver and stuff. No, that's the only guy he really does business with at this point, I think. Other guys, though, I gotta say, as far as like a fun interview that really wasn't like cringeworthy or anything, was DDP, just because it was so positive, you know?
Right.
He had some good stories in there, but it, you know, he wasn't being set up as a disaster, unlike Tammy Sitch, which her interviews are always just a disaster.
Will you admit that the WWE ECW was better than the original ECW?
Absolutely not. And here's why. Because it was sloppily executed. Like, here's the thing about WWE ECW. The original intention with it was not, you know, to bring back, you know, the days of the ECW arena. Basically, the intention was to do what NXT is doing now. I believe Triple H even said that on a conference call once. Like, this is our second chance to right the wrongs of WWE ECW. We're doing it right this time. Because they just picked a brand name that people knew, but they ended up doing more harm than good and tarnishing the legacy, which is why Paul Heyman, you know, had the infamous plane ride where he got fired or quit, depending on who you ask.
You talk like you're an insider, but you're not.
No, I'm not. I just do my research and listen.
Have you watched the product recently?
Since WrestleMania, I'll be honest, I really have not watched Raw. And that's just for me because I find that basically, you know, because you got to remember about the television product, it's not really, its primary concern is not to be entertainment for you. It's a commercial. It's a commercial for the network. It's a commercial for their social media. It's a commercial, you know, for their merchandise. So it's going to be slow. And I've just kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? I don't have 3 hours to sit here and watch this. So I'll just watch the network, and if there's anything good I need to go back and see, I'll go to YouTube.
Listener question.
Breaking news.
Why do you believe wrestling fans are selfish and want the WWE to exploit the death of Owen Hart for profit by selling a DVD?
Against his widow's wishes.
Against Martha Hart's wishes.
Wait, okay, so they're saying that the fans want to exploit the death of Owen Hart even though they're not the ones making the money.
Well, I mean, that's what...
You're saying the fans want this.
Why are wrestling fans so selfish and want the WWE to exploit the death of Owen Hart for profit by selling a DVD against the wishes of his widow?
I mean, I can understand a question like, why do we want a Owen Hart DVD, but... That's kind of a loaded question. Why do the fans want it exploited when they're not the ones making the money? I think a more fair question would be, why would WWE want it exploited?
Okay, do you believe...
Because they correct the band
for okay, well then let me ask you this.
I don't understand that question because it seems loaded and doesn't make any sense, really.
The fans are exploited. They're the ones creating demand. When they create demand, that's how they profits off of it. It is the fans.
Do you believe... Now, let me ask... All right, first question, though. Are you excited to see a possible Owen Hart DVD?
You know, I think it would be, you know, of course, you know, because you want to be able to have a nice little compact, you know.
It's time for a change.
Yes, it is time for a change. You know, I mean, it's always good when you like a wrestler to have a compact little, you know, source to watch just their matches without having to go, you know, between shows on the network to find a match or search for it. You have it all right there, neat on a DVD. Of course, you know, if you're a fan of his, of course, you know.
My next question is this. Do you believe wrestling fans are selfish to an extent?
Yes, I do.
Explain.
You know, I mean, I could talk for days.
We don't have days.
And I know we don't. I got to, you know. It just seems that fans really are just, I don't want to say they're out of touch because they're not. They're the fans. They're the one who decides what the touch is. But it just seems sometimes they're maybe unreasonable with the climate that we live in. Like for example, you have these fans who will clamor for the Attitude Era back. It's like, that's not how it works. The Attitude Era was great, but that was the product that we got under the circumstances of, you know, the way things were in society, the way they were business-wise, not only in the wrestling business, but in television and with corporate sponsors and things like that. It's not going to happen again. And plus, they already did it. If you just go back to, I mean, you basically would be going back and watching the best of the Attitude Era again.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it's just...
All right, I got a question.
I think they focus too much on the negative or what their fantasy... They get too wrapped up in fantasy booking. They get mad if a result doesn't go the way they want. It's like, look, you're not here to dictate the storylines. You're here to see the story and see how it plays out. If you don't like it once it's concluded, that's fine. You didn't like it. But when you're, you know, complaining about how, oh, this build for this one week wasn't great, you know, to get to the way that you want the story to go, when we don't even know where it's going yet, that's just selfish and honestly, it's ignorant.
What do you think of Sweet and Tarts becoming, Shock is becoming Sweet Tart Sours now?
Wait, Shock Tarts aren't around anymore?
We have,
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's WCW and WWF merging all over again.
That's a TNA.
Okay,
we'll get to that later.
The so-called Wednesday Night Wars that have now started.
Yeah, I gotta see that.
Your opinion, and what did you watch, and what did you not watch?
Oh, well, first of all, I just thought that the way that it was announced was hilarious and just a bad... not even 24 hours. It was a bad 20 minutes for TNA. Like, I assume you watched the NXT TakeOver special?
I did.
I watched it live, and as the show was going off the air, which we all know, of course, Samoa Joe comes out and, you know, shocks the world.
Right.
Within minutes of that show going on, or actually, I believe seconds, I believe somebody said, of that show going off the air, Meltzer reports that TNA is not going to be renewed in September, and Ring of Honor is going to be not only going in the prelude through September, but is eventually going to be replacing them.
So TNA is going to be left without a home.
So not only did one of their biggest stars in their history show up on WWE TV, they find out minutes later, oh, we're not going to have a home come September. You know, Dixie Carter was just absolutely in a corner, hopefully with some vodka in her hand, just going, oh, God.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you believe it's going to eventually be an actual war between, like, say, ROH and NXT competing on the same nights? Because TNA has gone to crap.
You know, and that, you know what the sad thing about that is? It's not because of the wrestling. I will defend that because I watched it all the way through. It's because I don't have Destination America.
Is it the storylines?
No, it's no. I'll tell you. I will be fair about this. I will give them credit where it is due. Ever since last summer, you know, give or take, when they really started with that three-way tag team tournament with the Wolves, the Dudleys, and the Hardys, TNA, honestly, the in-ring and, you know, the storylines. You know, it's hit or miss sometimes, but overall, the product itself on television has not been bad.
Okay.
The problem TNA constantly faces, and, you know, they may have improved, but by then it was too late, is their business practices. And they had dug themselves into such a hole that even with the improved product, there's no way they can get themselves out of it. And that's where they're stuck with the bill now.
Are we going to see a war between ROH and NXT?
It's, you know, I think it's too soon to tell, simply because NXT is on the WWE Network. ROH is on Destination America, which is not a major channel. A lot of people don't. I don't have it.
I think the only way you could get it is if you have DirecTV. Do you get it on UVerse, Lyman?
I believe I do.
Okay.
But you see, Ring of Honor does have the advantage in that they're not solely on Destination America.
Yeah, they're showing.
They are still
replays.
Being shown on Sinclair broadcast stations.
They're actually replays of what they're showing.
Yeah, like here, Ring of Honor is on here on Cox Sports Television on Friday nights.
And if you don't have DirecTV, you don't get Cox Sports.
No,
Television.
but it gives them more. But it gives does give Ring of Honor an advantage over TNA,
you don't have Cox.
And it does.
Huh?
You don't have Cox.
No, I don't have DirecTV. Oh no, I have DirecTV.
If you don't have Cox, you don't get Cox Sports TV.
Right.
Yeah. But the point is ROH is in a better position business wise and exposure wise than TNA is. Let me know when I can.
No, keep going.
Well,
ROH is in a better position.
I'm just glad you made a booking for once.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean that's
finally show the fuck up.
Yeah.
So anyway, ROH is in a better position business wise because they are not in the hole financially. They're actually doing well on pay per view. They have a great television deal in that they're owned by a television company. They are in syndication across, you know, in many markets around the country, and they have this Destination America deal, which is really just extra icing on the cake.
It's sort of like the old WWE model when they went to
sort
USA.
Of.
When they went to the USA Network and then was in syndication back in the 80s.
And of course, you know, NXT has the advantage in they're on the WWE Network, which that's a niche thing that is paid for, so you know they're making money. And it can be on demand, so you know you don't even have to worry about DVR. You can just go back and watch it whenever you want. So I think we have to see, because remember, ROH has not produced new programming for Destination America yet. They're doing reruns from Toronto right now, which I think they're doing next week and maybe the week after. So until we see like new original programming specifically for them, we don't know how it's going to shape up.
Did you watch Ring of Honor on? No, you don't. You said you didn't have Destination America, so
no,
you couldn't have watched it.
I didn't watch it. I did DVR the CST show, which I'm going to go back and watch probably today.
Right. You got any other questions?
Oh, you want Matt's latest question?
Why not?
He wants to know what Paul Wonder is wearing and why he still has pants on.
Are you kidding me? I'm wearing clothes. Yes, I still have my pants on.
He's
I don't feel like showing my naked body to my people in this room.
Mr. Wonder? What are you wearing?
I'm wearing clothes. I don't get the question.
You sound hideous.
I don't like your attitude. I'm holding you in contempt.
Oh,
and cup.
What else is fucking new?
My cousin Vinny.
Watch your fucking mouth.
Oh, there's a fucking
asshole.
Surprise. Would you say? I love that movie.
Do you or did
Have
you
time,
ever
listen to me? Why?
Did you ever or do you still have a dream of breaking into the business?
Who honestly is a fan who doesn't have that fantasy, you know? I mean not really. I mean, if the opportunity ever came, I'd examine it and see what happened, but I mean, I'm not actively pursuing it. No.
How would you book yourself if you went into that situation?
You mean, no. Like, what role would I be in?
How would you book yourself? Would you book yourself as a manager? Would you book yourself as a wrestler?
Oh, I'd have to be a manager, or a referee. Or it'd be either manager or referee, depending on who's training me and what ideas I can come up with.
All right, now let me ask you this question. If you were to book yourself as a manager, do you have any ideas on what your character would be?
A few, but I'm not going to share them here, because somebody a lot smarter than me could probably turn it into something that could draw money.
But you wouldn't want you wouldn't care to share? Inquiring minds may want to know.
Yeah, I'm sure they would, because they could probably make some money off of it much faster than I could.
We don't have a very large listenership right now.
But you know, there's always that one troll trolling around the internet and might come onto this bar of gold right here and hear my idea, and then he'll be like, wow, I know what I'm gonna do now. And then 5 years from now they're in Ring of Honor or whatever using my idea, and you know what, I just don't want to take that chance. Mr.
Wonder, that's fine. Trying to think of what else we could possibly talk about. Do you have any? What we got? Another listener question. Oh. What about the Cena army of kiddies versus the Austin army of teenagers?
Oh, you're referring to my lost generation theory, aren't you?
If that's what the theory is,
yes, I have dubbed that the lost generation theory. Like, I thought of this one night. Of course, I was drinking.
You drinking?
Oh, no. Yes. I come up with my best stuff when I'm drinking.
Oh, there's a fucking surprise.
Right? It was just something that occurred to me when I was, like, just trying to take a moment. Because, I mean, this was at a time when it was really bad on the internet. Just everybody just, you know, being mad at the kids, you know, who love John Cena, which is ridiculous. You know, that's their hero. You know, you shouldn't dog them for that. But it did make me think about our generation and, you know, like, let me give you the example. Like, our age, like, we were all, like, what, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old when Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, the Attitude Era were big, right?
I was 15.
You were, oh, yeah, you're a little bit older than me, but I was born in 90, so I was, like, 7, 8, and he was good through when he was big through when I was 13. Those kids were, you know, they were in the crowd, you know, they had their Austin 316 shirts on, they were doing the middle finger in the air and stuff, and they were the little foot soldiers in the Monday Night War, really. You know, they were the little, you know, they were the foot soldiers, exactly. And really, around the time that group, you know, became like 16, 17, 18, by the time they were old enough to really appreciate, you know, having that, you know, being the mainstream of wrestling, by the time they got to that age, WWE said, oh, no, we, you know, we're good. We won the war. We don't need you anymore. We're going with the younger crowd. It's like, but wait, why didn't you do that when we were kids and then do the fun stuff, adult stuff when we became adults? You know, it's like they kept flipping the switch on us. They did the opposite of what we were supposed to be doing, and they conditioned us to, you know, to like what we like, really. Then we hate it when they don't do what we conditioned us to like.
Do you feel like they're still doing that to this day?
If you would have asked me that even 2 years ago, I would have said absolutely. But I think, and this is totally speculation on my part, but I think that Triple H has kind of given them a wake-up call as far as, you know, with the, because judging from how the NXT product has influenced the mainstream, the main roster product, because you see them, you know, doing things that really appeal to that ROH kind of audience, which Triple H has said he kind of wants to, he didn't use the word compete, but he wants to appeal to that audience with NXT. And it's and they're just more focused on in-ring product and focus and kind of marketing it or giving the atmosphere of like almost like an MMA kind of feel to it, where it's not, you know, silliness or corny promos. It's just about, hey, we're going to fight, and maybe there's some shenanigans that goes on backstage, but that just makes the rivalry more intense.
We're going to, before we preview the next network pay-per-view, and review Elimination Chamber, let's play a little word association. Sure. I'm going to give you some names, and you're going to tell me in 5 words or less what you think. All right, we'll start with Jim Cornette.
Brilliant but fucking crazy.
Blake Wilder.
Who?
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 I think he's ready.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Brilliant rhetorician, but also crazy.
Possibly one of the greatest heels of all time.
Absolutely.
Cadaver.
Who?
You've seen these guys wrestle.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Top draw of all time.
Really?
I mean, the numbers don't lie.
Jack Jameson.
Independent.
Always wrestler. Yes, Jack Jameson. Always a fun time.
Austin Aries.
Underutilized.
John Saxton. Okay, fine. Rudy Russo.
Rudy Russo? Great in the ring.
Trish Stratus.
Inspirational. And head of her time.
Blue Pants.
Who is that referring to? Is that referring to Batista?
No, it's the girl, the jobber on NXT for girls.
You talking about Bailey?
No, they call her Blue Pants.
There's theme song. Summing the Price is Right, too. Ironically, a great friend of Jack Jameson.
Really? I did not know that.
And she's now
only saw her once.
BWO. Apparently, no.
I guess we'll see.
Dixie Carter.
Horrible.
Terrible businesswoman.
Horrible school education.
Clueless.
Would you agree it's probably a byproduct for college education? Or lack thereof?
You know, I want to know that she graduated first because I still have not seen her diploma.
Well, either way,
she is a 1986 graduate of the University of Mississippi.
So yeah, so you might
Want to see her either on a featured alumni or see her diploma because I'll believe it when I see it.
So you basically can wipe your ass with a piece of Ole Miss diploma.
Not in this man's case, because this man got every penny's worth.
It's your turn.
Oh, it's always fun. Wait, who'd you say?
Dixie Carter.
Oh, yeah, I want blue pens.
No, but it's your
Enzo.
Turn.
Enzo.
Just fucking batshit crazy, and I love it.
Cowboy Bill Watts.
Tough son of a bitch.
Mike Adamley.
Walking disaster.
Wow. Do we end it there before we go into our... I think we should just end it right there before we go with our previews. Okay. Money in the Bank pay-per-view this weekend coming up.
Is it really this weekend?
Yeah, it really is.
Man, they're just hitting us with these pay-per-views.
Next Sunday,
I'm loving
not
it.
Today. Tonight.
Not tonight. Next week from now.
And then you got that July 4th pay-per-view.
Yeah, from Tokyo.
Yes, that is huge. Brock Lesnar will be facing Kofi Kingston on that show.
Different style in Japan you were mentioning.
Oh, absolutely. If you saw Wrestle Kingdom 9.
Did you watch it live? Wrestle Kingdom 9?
I bought it on pay-per-view. Problem was I went to the bar beforehand, and I made sure I left in enough time. I ordered the pay-per-view, was enjoying the commentary, especially in that big tag team match they had. And then I fell asleep. But luckily, I woke up just in time for the entrances of the main event.
So you watched it on replay?
Yes, I did watch the replay, and I was blown away.
Did you have to pay extra money for the replay?
No, I got it for free.
Okay. Money in the Bank pay-per-view this coming Sunday. Not as we are talking about this now, on this day. Kevin Owens... John Cena in the rematch. I believe the U.S. title is on the line.
Is the NXT title on the line?
No. No U.S. title on the line either. The title's not on the line.
The U.S. title's not on the line?
It's not
just
on the line.
Just a rematch.
Alrighty.
Thoughts?
I mean, so what do you want to know?
Your thoughts.
I mean, this is an indie fan's wet dream right here, and I don't know why the hell anybody... I've seen them try, would complain or have anything to complain about this feud so far.
Okay.
I mean, for God's sakes, we've gotten several unbelievable promos from Kevin Steen where he comes out looking like not only $1 million but a total badass. We've actually gotten a serious John Cena, which people have been screaming for the longest time. No cornball Cena here. We got a clean win with Owens because Cena buries everybody. He buried Bray Wyatt. He killed Ryback. I mean, oh, God, please don't let him kill Steen. Or, I'm sorry, Owens. And we got a clean win. What is there to complain about? This is gold.
Right. Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, title on the line. In a ladder
match. Ambrose.
In a ladder match for the heavyweight title.
It's Rollins and Ambrose in a ladder match. If Owens didn't sell you, that better sell you. Otherwise, you need to get out of being a fan.
Money in the Bank ladder match for the contract. Neville, Dolph Ziggler, Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston, Sheamus, Kane, and Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns didn't lose his spot?
No.
Okay, he's still in it. I
imagine they're building towards a triple threat match at SummerSlam.
That would make sense. But I'm not even going to fantasy
Shield.
Book this.
Right.
I'm not
that's
even going
to... Shield, not Lesnar.
Right. I'm not even going to try to fantasy book, you know, what the ramifications of who wins Money in the Bank, if it is Reigns, are. I'm just going to say, look, yes, 99% of people think, oh, yeah, it's a done deal. Roman Reigns is going to win. And if that happens, great. But that also leaves us so, because we're so certain, it leaves us open to a swerve. So I think, you know what, it's going to be a fun match.
Tag team titles on the line, the New Day against the Primetime Players. What do you think of New Day?
He hasn't watched the product.
I saw a little bit of New Day at Chamber and at Payback, and I got to say, I was so against this at first because they just had nothing. But you know what? It looks like they're Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston, and Big E. It looks like in their segments they're having fun with it, and they're actually getting heat. So, you know what? It's fine. To answer your question about the match, I don't think they're taking the belts off of New Day anytime soon.
Well, it's going to be Big E versus Big E and Xavier Woods. Kofi's going to be wrestling in the Money in the Bank. So,
yeah.
You still have that possibility of interference.
I do love that.
Because they are using the Freebird rule.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that could be part of the storyline. It's like, oh, well, if Kofi had been in the match and not whoever, you know, that could be, you know. But it's too early to break them up, though.
I think.
Well, they haven't hit their peak yet.
Hit their peak yet.
I think Xavier Woods is the modern-day genius.
Okay.
The genius character from the early 90s.
I like Sandow doing it.
Well, Sandow doing the genius was fun, but now just with Xavier Woods' character, it takes me back to that point. I think it's a great gimmick for that group.
It's getting heat. I mean, they get people riled up, for obvious reasons, they can push the envelope a little further than other people can.
Those are the only four announced matches. We obviously are going to get a couple more matches announced here leading in.
I got to say, the Divas, they've been improving. They're not at the level of NXT women, that's without question, but they've been getting better.
This is talentism, but it's more how they're presented. I think we spoke about this on the last podcast. It's more about how they're presented and how they're booked to me than it is about their talent level.
I agree, because, I mean, the Bellas... you know, people give them crap, but you know what? They got the stuff, and when they get when they're allowed to show it, they knock it out of the park. And I mean, you know, Paige and Naomi and Natalia. I mean, you know, you don't even have to question it. We know that.
Let's go back to Elimination Chamber. Did you watch all or
yes?
Any?
I watched all of it.
New Day successfully defending the tag team titles in the Elimination Chamber, which was a really neat concept how they pulled that off.
Yeah, I was skeptical of it at first. I'm like, wait, you can't. How are you gonna pull this off with four? Was it four teams?
No, there was six teams.
There were six teams, and I was like, how the hell are they gonna pull this off? And it was awesome. The only complaint I have about that match is, I think it was the Bull,
El Torito,
when he was on the top of the cage,
right.
And it looked like he was gonna do something. Or maybe it was one of the other Matadores, or maybe it was one of the Lucha Dragons. I can't remember. They get to the top of the chamber, climb up there, and then they're just hanging there, and it looks like they're gonna do something amazing, and then they just end up drop off. Yeah, it was Kalisto. I was a little disappointed in that because they were building it and building and building, and nothing happened. But other than that, it was a fun match.
Nikki Bella successfully defending the Divas title against Paige and Naomi.
I gotta say, there was a little bit of hard hitting action in that wasn't
expected. Naomi is rubbing. It just seemed the way they were wrestling and the way that match took place. It just seems to me that Naomi is just rubbing people the wrong way.
How do you mean?
Well, just with her attitude, really. But that's a gimmick thing, and it's working.
That's what I'm saying.
Her.
Like, you're not talking backstage. You're talking
No.
You're talking kayfabe, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm talking.
Oh yeah. I mean,
ring.
That's how
on TV.
Yeah. I mean,
it's
she's
working for her.
It seems like she's towing the. I don't know. Is she actually a heel? Like, is that confirmed?
Well, that's what I mean. That's how I took her character to be during that match.
Sometimes I can't tell, but it seems like they're teetering. You know, they're teetering the seesaw towards heel.
I thought the Kevin Owens-John Cena match was an absolute classic.
Exactly.
I mean, there's no other words to describe it. It was an absolute classic.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Breath of fresh air for wrestling fans. Actual wrestling fans.
That's the perfect way to put it. It was a breath of fresh air.
Neville defeating Bo Dallas in what some probably feel was maybe a little bit of a squash.
Sorry, I lied to you. I stepped outside to smoke a cigarette during that match.
That explains it right there. Ryback, your new Intercontinental Champion.
I gotta say, I didn't think Ryback had a chance in hell of winning that belt, but I was so happy when he did.
How long do you think they keep the belt on them for?
I think they're having a wait and see attitude with it. I think they're honestly just of the opinion, you know what? That's up to him.
Dean Ambrose beats Rollins by disqualification. A little bit of a swerve at the end of that match.
I got to say, that was one of the best executed swerves I've seen from WWE in a long time. For one word, for one reason only. Tempo. Because they pulled it off with the ref switch so quickly, and they got the count, and they didn't really alert you visually that there was some kind of thing up in the air, that there was going to be some kind of, you know, controversy, until he was well into celebrating, and people, even the most skeptical people, were like, holy shit, he actually won!
Yeah.
And then they timed it just right, where they had, then after a few, probably 20 seconds, they had the refs go over and start conferencing, and then you're like, oh no, they got me. Right. They got me.
It was great. It was great.
Perfectly timed, and I had actually bought into the fact, I was like, wait, he won!
Right.
And we were all like jumping up and down like, Dean Ambrose won! It was just a fun moment. And then I couldn't even be mad that they did the swerve because it was done so well and it was entertaining.
Thoughts about what we could possibly see at Money in the Bank as far as surprises maybe? Or do we think the obvious is what's going to happen?
I can't foresee any... Like, you mean like a surprise return or something like that?
Maybe like a surprise result in a match. Did they put the belt on Ambrose to continue the feud,
Well, that's why it was so shocking when I thought he had won in the first place, because I thought they're going to keep the belt on Rollins until Lesnar comes back so that they can, you know, have that rematch, because he did steal the belt from Lesnar, right. So that score has to be settled. Honestly, you know, it's sad to say this, but I think that they're really just using this as a vehicle to elevate Dean Ambrose, you know, because they did do some damage to him, but they're trying to make up for it and get him back to where he's a contender and, you know, he's a top guy. But I think, honestly, at the end of the day, this is just to keep Rollins occupied with a good program that sells pay-per-views until Lesnar comes back. So I don't see Rollins losing it.
I want to thank Brian for joining us here. On this podcast, we hope to have him back as a guest later on.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
As we continue, special thanks again goes out to my colleague Lyman Zerga, who is our coordinating producer.
Lyman!
Our coordinating producer, research guy. He fields all the listener questions, even though some of them may be in a little crazy, a little surprising, that caught our guests a little bit off guard.
Someone wants to know if you want to have dinner tonight.
Do I want to have dinner tonight?
Yeah, he says you can cook.
Is she hot?
No, he said it was a heat. No, I'm unavailable.
Oh,
well,
no, then he's unavailable.
I'm unavailable tonight.
He promises to wear a mask.
I'm unavailable tonight.
Alright, so 5 o'clock.
For all of us here at the Heel Turn Podcast, I'm Paul, and we hope to have you as our guest next time.